Oh man, I love that song. That's my jam right there. For many, many reasons, the hairstyles, number one, amazing. Anybody know when that song came out, was released? Oh man, you are good. You're one. From what I read on Wikipedia, you're just 1 year off though. 1984, but man, you still get the prize right there. I was in fifth grade. I actually went and drug up this picture for you to see. Brent Clark, circa, or you might think that would be Jaden. He hates that. But yeah, there I am around 1984, 85. I am a child of the 80s. Anybody else in this room? We're a small contingent here, you know? I mean, we need more Gen Xers here. But I mean, love the group Wham, George Michael, man. I loved listening to that on the radio. We had no such things as Spotify or anything. You listen to the radio all the time just to get to that one song you really wanted to hear. And if you're like me, you had your boombox ready to go and you hit record. That's right. I had that boombox because, man, then you could listen to it whenever you wanted. Wham was a great group, you know, had tons of hits. Everything She Wants was kind of their big one. Or my absolute favorite, you know, Wake Me Up Before You Go Go. I mean, just listen to these lyrics of that song. You put the boom boom into my heart. You sent my soul sky high when your loving starts. I mean, let's just be real. They don't write them like that anymore. You know, they just don't write them like that anymore. What I love is that I don't know that I love this. I'm now old enough to see some of the trends that I had when I was in elementary and junior high school. They're coming back. Were you aware of this? Like the 80s trends are coming back. Like just look at this. So back to the 80s, we have patchwork jeans, high-waisted jeans, acid-wash jeans, and God help us, even shoulder pads. I'm not sure who thinks these are a great idea to bring back, but evidently they're coming back, and let's just be real. Some of those just need to stay buried in the past. I'm waiting for parachute pants. Anybody else waiting for parachute pants to make a return? If you don't know what those are, ask your parents. I'm sure they know. You know, Last Christmas is a great song. I love it. It's catchy. You'll be singing it most of the day now, right? You know, because it's just that catchy song. It's really less to do about Christmas and more to do about unrequited love, right? I mean, it's like, I gave you my heart, you rejected me, and that's okay because you weren't really worth it anyway. I'm not hurting, you are. You know, I mean, that's typically how these songs go. And this song just exemplifies most of the love songs we see because it's all about the heart. I gave you my heart. And when we think about that, that's just weird, right? I mean, it's like I gave you my blood-pumping organ that keeps me alive. You know, it's about the size of your fist here in your chest. But for some reason in our culture, this has become to represent the core or the seat of our emotions, who we are. I mean, it has to be symbolic, otherwise it is just gross. When we say things like, I love you with all my heart. Or, you know, when love goes wrong, what do we say? We say, shot through the heart. And you're to blame, honey, because you give love a bad name. You know, when people are cold and cruel, we describe them what? As cold-hearted. I must admit, I hear that sometimes around my house. And when we want people to really give it their best effort, we say, put your heart into it, don't we? And so we have this concept of the heart. It's everywhere. In fact, in the Bible, when you go look at it, what's interesting is, as you study the Bible, it wasn't always the heart. There was actually, it was kind of the inside, your intestines, your stomach, your gut, your bowels, even your kidneys. I mean, and so that's kind of what the seat and core in the Old Testament times were. But they also talk about the heart, and many times, when the Bible talks, it talks about the heart in so many different ways. I mean, just look at this. Look at how the Bible talks about the heart. It says the heart can be troubled. It can be wounded. It can be pierced, grieved, or broken. And these are all from the Bible. It can be cheerful, glad, joyful, rejoicing. It can be whole or divided, wise or foolish, steadfast, true, upright, valiant. It can also be frightened, faint, cowardly, wandering, forgetful, dull, stubborn, proud, or hardened. It can be wicked or it can be pure. Wow, that is a lot that describes our heart, but really is talking less about this blood-pumping organ and more about who we are at the core, what really who we are personally, who you are as a person. And today what I want us to look at is just like the song said, you know, who are we giving our heart to? What are we giving our heart for? And so this morning, we're going to do a very Christian thing. We're going to do a heart check as we go through this to see what are we doing with our hearts. And I really believe that the way we get to Christmas here is Christmas is an amazing indicator of what we're doing with our hearts. It really is. You know, as I think about what I spend my time doing, how I spend my money, what I say is important, the activities I give myself to, it really says a lot. And we may want to justify and go, oh, but it's Christmas. But isn't that really just part of who we are? So let's take this heart check this morning and see. Maybe a little painful, hopefully not, but hopefully we find the encouragement here to see that wherever we are, there's hope for us. Because once we see where we are, we can begin making changes and move more closer to Jesus. In Matthew's Gospel, chapter 15, we find this interesting interaction between Jesus and the religious leaders. You know, these Pharisees and the teachers of the law, they're described. They were always questioning Jesus. They always had the mentality that says, we want to trip him up. You see, Jesus has come on the scene and he's teaching as one with authority, and they don't like this because they were the authority on all things spiritual and religious. And so Jesus is here, people are following him, and we don't like it. We got to shut this man down. And so they constantly were asking him questions to trip him up and find reasons to get rid of him, find reasons to arrest him, find reasons even maybe just to discredit him among the people. But on this particular interaction, they have a question for Jesus. And it's a funny question, in my opinion, because they just want to know why the disciples did not wash their hands before they ate. Why did they not wash their hands? Now, if you have children, you would think, well, my kids don't wash their hands most of the time before they eat. I'm just helping them build up immunities to stuff, I guess. But why is this such a big deal? What is going on? Why would this matter? I mean, yeah, we would look at it and go, that's just unsanitary. Wash your hands before you eat. But in this culture, in the Jewish culture, ceremonial cleansing, purity was a huge part of that culture, of that religion. And so when they look at Jesus and they see that his disciples aren't following these things, they're sitting back and not just going, this isn't just about washing his hands. This is about, are you rejecting everything that we say is important? Are you rejecting the whole law? Are you going to take everything that we say is important and go, yeah, that doesn't matter? And so that's why they want to question him, because their whole lives revolved around strictly keeping the letter of the law. That was the important. Do what the law says. Follow it to the letter. And Jesus uses their question to launch into a very powerful, convicting rebuke of them, but also their religious systems. And he begins to point out how they're creating loopholes and trying to get around the laws that they say they're trying to meet. And really, it's kind of an uncomfortable moment because Jesus doesn't pull any punches and he really says what needs to be said. So if you look at Matthew chapter 15, it's going to be on the screen. Let's look at how Jesus responds to the question. Jesus replied and he said, and why do you break the command of God for the sake of your tradition? For God said, honor your father and mother, and anyone who curses their father or mother is to be put to death. But you say that if anyone declares that what might have been used to help their father or mother is devoted to God, they are not to honor their father or mother with it. Thus you nullify the word of God for the sake of tradition. Aha! Create a loophole. When you don't like the way the rules are set up, you find a loophole to get around it so you can keep the letter of the law, even if you don't keep the spirit of the law. And that's exactly what they did. So the law said, honor your parents. And as parents age, as they got older, as they couldn't provide for themselves, it was the cultural responsibility of the children to provide for the parents. Well, bratty little children that they were, as they grew up, selfish mongrels, they didn't want to take care of their parents. All they wanted to do was keep their stuff for themselves. And so what they did is they said, you know what we can do? I can declare this is God's. This is God's. You can't touch it. Sorry, mom and dad. Sorry you're going hungry. Sorry you don't have what you need. But I have declared my stuff for God, and therefore it must be used for him because he is more important than you. Great loophole, right? I mean, pretty ingenious plan there to try to skirt what was happening because they didn't have to do what they needed to do. They said, oh, we've done something better. But see, what Jesus often does is he sees through their little scheme. He knows exactly why they've done what they've done, and he goes right to address the central point, which was their evil hearts. In fact, if we keep reading in Matthew 15, we find this. Jesus is still talking, and he says, "You hypocrites, you mask wearers, you play actors. Isaiah was right when he prophesied about you." And this is a big deal because Jesus is now going to the Old Testament, bringing it forward. And they loved the prophets. They loved Isaiah. And so he's using one of their heroes to condemn them. And he says, "And Isaiah was right when he says, these people honor me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me. They worship me in vain. Their teachings are merely human rules." Jesus called the crowd to him and said, "Listen and understand. What goes into someone's mouth does not defile them, but what comes out of the mouth is what defiles them." Jesus looks at this and he says, let's just cut the garbage, okay? Let's just get to the real issue here. Let's talk about what really matters, what's right in front of you. And here's what's happening. You want to say the right things. You want to even do the right things, but you don't want to be the right person. You think that everything you do on the outside is what's going to matter. If you do the religious stuff, then you'll be okay. And I'm here to tell you that's not right. That's garbage. You see, because what we find in Jesus addressing here is a few things. And the first one is this, is that they had completely disregarded their heart. They just didn't even think about it. They didn't think twice about it. They ignored it because they had elevated action, behavior above everything else. And they said, as long as we do, then who we are, it doesn't matter. Because for them, behavior was everything. Do the right things and really be whoever you wanted to be. Believe whatever you want to believe. But you know the problem with this? The problem with this is even though we may try to ignore the heart and disregard the heart completely, what's on the inside will always make its way on the outside. Amen. You can cover that up for a little while, but after a while, who you really are at your core is going to come out. Why? Because it's exhausting to be a hypocrite. It's exhausting to be a play actor and wear a mask all the time. And Jesus is wanting them to see that. What's on the inside will come up. Whatever type of tree you are will be the fruit that you bear. How many times in Scripture do we see that over and over and over? You see, disregarding the heart is what leads to that desire to find loopholes. It's what leads us to say, you know what? I want to look like I'm the right person without actually being the right person. Because I can be unloving and selfish, and I don't really have to care about others as long as I, you know, flip a 20 in the offering plate at church a little bit, or if I give $10 to the missions emphasis, because then I've done my duty, and it makes us feel better. So we see Jesus addressing this whole problem of disregarding the heart. But as we think about the heart, there's other issues, I think, that come to the surface that we have to be willing to address. And it's not just that we disregard the heart, but we also sometimes distract the heart. Now, this one's very convicting for me. I don't like this one. Let's move to the third one. No, just kidding. I can keep myself so busy doing good things, doing church things, ministry things, and justify it like nobody else. But what happens is when I disregard my heart, I find that I can also distract my heart, because then if I distract myself, it never pauses long enough to see, who am I really? What are my values? Is what I'm doing matching who I really am, and vice versa? You see, I think our culture has become masters of distraction. Boy, we are masters of distraction. I remember a quote I heard years ago when the first television was introduced at like the World's Fair or something somewhere. One of the guys that was reviewing the television actually said, "This device will not make it because the American family is not interested in just sitting down in front of this device. They are too busy and they're too productive. It won't make it." That guy was right on. Not only was he wrong, he was bad wrong. Because now not only do we have a television in our house, we have these little things right here in our pockets, 24/7, 365. If you want to distract yourself, you can do it with Candy Crush for hours and hours. I don't know if there's a new game that's more important than Candy Crush. I haven't played one in a long time. But I mean, we have entertainment options. We have Netflix and Hulu and Disney Plus, and we could go on and on and on. We have so much technology to distract us. But you know what else distracts us? We have more disposable income than I think any generation ever. We have more time than any generation ever. So what we do is we distract ourselves with our hobbies. We distract ourselves with our leisure time. Not that we shouldn't rest at times, but we need to not allow those resting times to become just distracting times. Because the problem is what distractions do is they blind us to what is really on the inside. It keeps us from paying attention to what really matters. And for me, as I said, my distractions even come across in being very busy for God, different ministry activities. But we can't forget that God isn't looking to keep us busy all the time for Him. Jesus didn't die on the cross so that we could run a church or run groups or be involved with social justice all the time. He was born, He lived, He died, and He rose so that our relationship with Him could be restored. And you know how you build a relationship with someone? T-I-M-E. It is time spent in the presence of God. And I'm not saying everybody quit volunteering for stuff at Ashworth. Please don't. I really appreciate all those that volunteer. But what I'm saying is we have to be balanced in this. We cannot just keep ourselves so busy that we stop paying attention to who we are and who God is shaping us to be. So it's not just that we disregard the heart. It's not that we just distract the heart. But I think there's a third problem that we have here as well. And that's this. We devalue the heart. What do I mean by that? I think sometimes we so devalue ourselves that we find that we are willing to give ourselves away to things that just don't matter. And we think they do. We think they do. We just live for the temporary, the now, the temporal. And this is where Christmas, I think, can be a real challenge for us. I mean, we know the real meaning of Christmas. Jesus is the reason for the season. Let's put that on a sign. We know that. But we get caught up in all the trappings of Christmas, and if we're not careful, we'll find ourselves more materialistic, more greedy, more self-focused than we ever thought we could be. You know, this summer we went through the Sermon on the Mount, and we looked at one of those passages in Matthew where Jesus says, "Where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." And I think during Christmas, it's a great time for us to evaluate, what are we giving ourselves to? Are we giving ourselves to things that really matter? Where have we placed our heart? You know, it's last Christmas, I gave you my heart. That person evidently wasn't worth giving it to. But how often have we devalued ourselves and our worth before God and given our hearts to things that don't matter? Remember, the heart is the core essence of who you are. And you are valuable, of tremendous worth. Can I tell you a secret? Not so much a secret. You were worth dying for. Think about that for just a moment. You were worth dying for because someone did die for you. Jesus died for you. So why would we be so willing to give ourselves to just any old thing like career or success or money or stuff or even unhealthy relationships? Why would we devalue what Jesus thought was worth dying for? That's a great question, isn't it? Why would we do that? Why wouldn't we want to make sure that where we place our hearts and what we're giving ourselves to was 100% worth it? You see, we have to be careful to not disregard our hearts, not to devalue our hearts, and not to let them be distracted. Because the problem of the heart is a serious one. Jesus is very clear in this passage that He places a high value on where we place our hearts. Because without our heart, we're doing nothing but going through the motions. There's a proverb, Proverbs 4:23, talks about this. It says, above all else, guard your heart, for everything you do flows from it. That's a powerful proverb, isn't it? There's another translation that says, guard your heart because it is the wellspring of life. I love that imagery. It's the wellspring of life. It is everything we do, everything we are flows from the heart. And Jesus wants us to make sure that we're not spending all our time putting on the makeup and prettying up the outside when what we need to be focused on is on the inside. Focusing on, have we experienced Jesus? Are we following Jesus? What you have happening on the inside far outweighs the good deeds that you are trying to do. We don't always think that, do we? But there's so much truth in that statement. What is happening on the inside far outweighs the good deeds you're trying to do. Good deeds, religious behavior, is no substitute for being with God. Not only is it no substitute, it's never going to be sufficient. It's always going to leave us lacking, feeling like, have we done enough? And what is so amazing about this is we don't have to sit here and wonder, have I done enough? We don't have to sit here and wonder, am I loved? Am I valued? Does God care? Because he's already proven that time and time again. And if we sit here this morning, I want you to think about your heart, and we're going to pause in a moment and do that. But what I want you to understand is that when we see that there may be a heart issue, that God is in the business of heart renewal. Favorite passage of mine is in Ezekiel 36. You got to love Ezekiel. Man, it'll make your eyes gloss over if you read the whole thing in a sitting. But that prophet is speaking to a group of people who've been forsaken by God, who they have forsaken God, excuse me, and they've been taken into exile. They've lost heart. And Ezekiel tells them, speaking for God, he says, I will give you a new heart and put a new spirit in you. I will remove from you your heart of stone and give you a heart of flesh. I will give you life. That's what God is offering. And you imagine being a person in exile, being taken from your homeland, feeling as if God has completely rejected you. And in that moment, a prophet coming and speaking these words to you, saying, hey, I'm going to give you a new heart. And I'll put a new spirit in you. I'm going to take that heart of stone and I'm going to give you a heart of flesh. What would that do to you? That discourage you? No. There's that glimmer, that flicker of hope that you've been holding out for to think, oh yes, God is still there. He still desires me. He still loves me. He's not given up on me. And maybe you're sitting here today and you feel that. You feel that God has moved on from you, that God has neglected you or pushed you away. Or maybe you feel like you've pushed God away. I want you to know that even though this was written to the people in exile, this is also written to us because the God who wrote this or spoke these words thousands of years ago, this is still his business today. This is what he still does today. He still takes the heart of stone and makes it a heart of flesh. He takes it and renews us from the inside out, and he meets us where we are, and he gives us exactly what we need. You know, as I said, sometimes our hearts are far away from God, and that's on us because we have moved away from God like the Jewish people had done. That's why they were in exile, that sin can keep us away, chasing after the wrong things. Other times, though, you know what happens? Life just beats the snot out of us. Anybody ever felt that way before? Life just keeps coming and coming and coming. And sometimes you feel that you need that renewal. You feel like your heart is just a million miles away from God. And the enemy comes in and he hits us after event, and disappointment after disappointment, and tragedy after tragedy, and we don't feel like we can even get to our feet. I just want you to know this message is for you today, that God says, I can give you a new heart. I can renew you from the inside. God's looking at us today, and he's not telling you, get busier for me. He's not saying, do more activity. Yeah, that's going to come. That's going to happen because when you're passionately in love with somebody, when you're passionate about what God has done for you, you're going to give your life to whatever he wants you to do. That's going to happen. But before you get there, it's not we do in order to get God's affection. It's we've already got God's affection. Let's live in that for a while. And let's appreciate what God has done. And then allow that to be the motivator to move us and get us to where God wants us to be. As Christmas, when we want to think about the presents and the fun and the family and the lights and the trees, it's also a good time to step back and see how we do Christmas. What is that saying about us? So this morning, I just want to ask you this question. How's your heart? Take a moment. How's your heart? I'm just going to be quiet and let you think on that for a second. Maybe you're here and you're just thinking, I don't know. I don't know where my heart is. I've been so distracted. I haven't been paying attention to it. I don't know. Maybe right now in the moment, your prayer to God is just, God, shine the light. Open my eyes. Let me see. How's my heart? For some in the room, this could be a very painful thing. You've disregarded the heart for so long that the pain that's in there is coming up and you're just like, I don't know, I don't want to see it. But just know healing only begins when we're willing to take that honest look, to take down the mask. And what's so amazing is that we have a God who says, you know what, it's okay. Show that pain. Show who you really are. Because God has never once said, you're too filthy, you're too dirty, you're too broken for me to care for. So now you've thought about how's your heart. So here's my question for you. How can you refocus your heart this week? What can you do? Oh, there's that word do. I'm not talking about legalistic obligation, but sometimes we need a change in pace, change of activity to help make things happen. So earlier, I think it was this year or last year, I can't remember, it's all a blur. We did a thing called the daily office, where we said, you know what, twice a day, take 5 minutes. That's all it takes, 5 minutes. Start with 2 minutes of silence, end with 2 minutes of silence, and then take 1 minute in between and read a scripture, pray. And do that twice a day, 5 minutes. Maybe that's a great practice. If you want to do more than five, you can do 10 minutes. And maybe just sit there and read a verse a few times and ask God to speak to you. Maybe it's reading the Advent book that we're going through. I don't know about you. I've really enjoyed it. We're reading it with my kids at night, and I'm reading the adult version here in the office. It's really good. Maybe it's saying a short prayer and ending with silence just to allow God to speak to you. What will you do this week? Because otherwise, if we are not intentional about this, do you know what's going to change? Nothing. Nothing. And we have to purpose in our hearts. And you know, I can be a pretty stubborn dude, and when I put my heart to something, you know what I give it? 110%. But I have to be intentional about it to make those changes. And here's the other final question. It's not just how's your heart or what are you going to do, but who are you going to share it with? Uh-oh. Now we got personal. That's right. I want you to share this with someone. Maybe it's the question of how's your heart, and you need to find someone that you trust that you can share that with, and you need to say to them, I need to tell you my heart is broken, my heart is joyful, my heart is whatever. Or maybe it's you need to follow up with somebody and say, hey, my rhythms have been goofy, and I need to get some structure back in my life, and I need to put Jesus first. And so this week, I'm going to take 5 minutes, I'm going to take 10 minutes, whatever, at my lunch break, and I'm going to sit in silence. It's going to be weird and uncomfortable, but I really want to create the space for God to speak to me in that moment. Who are you going to share that with? Not so they can say, are you doing it? Come on, let's get it together. But it's so somebody can be there to encourage you. Hey, did you get that done today? Oh, well, you know, I'm going to pray that you get there tomorrow. Oh, great. What did God say to you during that time? I find personally that when I share it with someone, it helps me. It keeps me accountable and it keeps me going. Maybe it's an Ashworth at home group. Doesn't matter if you're meeting right now or not. Pick up the phone, send a text, shoot an email. Use the time between the meetings to connect with that group. Sunday school classes, whatever. Don't go it alone. And be brave enough to ask somebody. And then if somebody asks you, be brave enough to say, yes, let's talk. Whatever the situation you're in today, the reality is this. You cannot be all God created and designed you to be, to live the life God meant for you to live, unless you live from the heart and the heart that is given to the right things. A little scary thought here to end with. The Pharisees ignored this condition, and it resulted in incredible hard-heartedness. They couldn't see the truth even when it was right in front of them, and they couldn't receive the love of Jesus even with him standing right there offering it. And it was their hard hearts that eventually led them to crucify the very person they'd been searching their entire lives for, the Messiah. And interestingly enough, they masked the hardness of their hearts by their religiosity.